Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. Today's podcast title is Downtown Deficits. I'm joined by Kunal Kamol, a reporter on our team, and I'd like to welcome for the first time to our podcast, Thomas Brozy, a senior research associate at the Tax Policy Center. We'll be discussing city budgets amidst a declining commercial property tax landscape. Kunal, welcome back to the podcast.
Hello, Paul, and welcome, Thomas.
And Thomas, welcome to the Muni Lowdown.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Paul and Kunal.
So Thomas, let's start with an overview of your expertise, and then I want to lead that into the question of what prompted your investigation into the future of commercial real estate and city budgets.
So my work focuses on state and local tax policy, and specifically I'm interested in the property tax. As it became clear in the past few years that work from home was here to stay and that there was going to be a large decline in demand for office buildings, there was a lot of talk in the media of urban doom loop, of declining downtowns. And so I became interested in seeing two things. First, could we already observe some of that decline in commercial property in cities' latest budgets and their latest fiscal reports? And second, how reliant are different cities on commercial property taxes? How important are commercial property taxes for city budgets?
Thomas, local property tax revenues are comprised of both residential and commercial taxes, right? And your research highlights the divergence between the two property values. What are the key factors driving this divergence, and how does it complicate revenue projections for local governments?
Let me start with saying that historically, residential real estate and commercial real estate have been pretty correlated, right? They typically depend on where people want to live and where jobs are. And until recently, most workers lived near their work. They commuted from the suburbs. And so even though commercial and residential properties values don't necessarily move one to one, they were highly correlated. And COVID-19 and the shift to remote work really changed this paradigm for a lot of workers and had deep structural changes in many labor markets. A lot of workers now don't have to live near their jobs. Even if they do, they don't have to commute. And so that means that there was a shift in this historical correlation where you have cities with rising residential property values and at the same time declining commercial real estate values, mostly driven by the decline in office values.
So Thomas, I'm not good with jargon. I need your help right here. What's the distinction between assessed value versus taxable value versus market value? And then going a little bit further, why is assessed value viewed as a lagging indicator? And I appreciate if you could define what a lagging indicator is.
Let me start with market values. Market value simply represents what investors, what potential buyers are willing to pay for an asset. For most assets, and commercial real estate included, it really depends on what buyers and investors expect future returns of that asset to be, what kind of income is going to be generated. And so when you have new information, for example, in the commercial real estate market, that investors expect lower income, lower returns because there is falling office demand, the market value is going to adjust pretty rapidly. On the other hand, assessed values are calculated by local assessors and is what determines the basis of the local property tax base. And if you think of residential real estate, a lot of residential real estate is assessed with a method where assessors compare the property with other similar type of properties that have been sold recently and have the same characteristics. But in the commercial real estate market, that's a little bit difficult to do because a lot of those properties are very unique and there is not necessarily comparable sales. So assessors use in most areas an income method where they get data from the property owners on the net income and expenses of the property, and then derive an assessed value for those properties. And so the key distinction here is that assessed values are based on current income versus market value that are based on expected future income. And now the difference between assessed value and taxable value is that a lot of cities have specific programs to reduce the tax burden on property owners. That could be exemptions, tax abatements, credits, etc., which can lower the taxable value compared to their initial assessed value. And now, why is there a lag between the assessed value and the market value? And that comes mainly from this distinction I was making between using current income and using future expected income. In the commercial real estate market, a lot of leases are assigned for extended periods of time. So that means that some buildings now some office buildings can generate a lot of income because the tenants signed leases before the pandemic when they expected to use these offices, but the market expects those tenants to not renew their lease or the new lease to generate less income, to have rents that are lower than previous rents. And so as leases get renewed, as some of those offices get sold on the market for values lower than they were estimated in the past, the asset values are going to be adjusted to reflect that.
So linking all these things together that you just discussed, why will it take years for cities to see the full impact of declining commercial property revenues?
Going back to this issue of the way that those buildings are assessed, and the distribution of leases is going to span a lot of different years. Every year, you expect a fraction of current office leases to be renewed, right? So every year, you have a fraction that is renewed and potentially at a lower income. So a handful of buildings are going to be reassessed every year to reflect those new leases. And similarly, when you have new sales, property owners can then use that data to change their assessment, or assessors use sales data to adjust the assessed value of a building. And that's what creates this kind of slow, gradual adjustment where one building after another is going to be adjusted based on new information that comes in.
So Thomas, which cities or regions appear to be most vulnerable to revenue losses due to lower CRE tax collections, and why?
There are two main characteristics where I want to start. The first is simply reliance on commercial property taxes. In other words, what share of revenues of a budget of a city comes from commercial property taxes? And that varies a lot by cities. If you look at some of the cities with the highest reliance, at least in terms of large cities, you have Boston, for example, where almost a third of its total revenues come from commercial property taxes. You have a lot of large cities in Texas. Dallas, for example, has about 20% of its revenues from commercial property taxes. Large cities like Atlanta, Charlotte have a pretty high reliance, around the same number, 20%. And then you have other cities in Texas. New York City, for example, has about 10 to 12% of its budget that comes from commercial property taxes. And then the second important characteristics is the size of the office market, right? So when you think of commercial real estate, offices are a big chunk of it, but there are other things in that category, right? Retail, hospitality are also important in commercial real estate. And if you look at nationally, for example, offices make up around 15 to 20% of the value of total commercial real estate, but in specific cities, that share is much larger. So in New York City, for example, about 45% of commercial real estate as assessed is offices. In DC, there's some estimates that it could be up to 60% of the value of commercial real estate. So cities that depend a lot more on offices are going to be more vulnerable. And then I want to mention a couple of other important points that can make some cities more vulnerable than others. One is how dependent they are on commuters. And if you look at DC, for example, there was historically a lot of commuters coming from neighboring states like Virginia and Maryland that would come into the city, consume, shop, and help the economy of the city, right? So if the shift to work from home changes that paradigm and means that there's a lot less activity, economic activity in the city, that can make a city more vulnerable versus another city where commuters tended to come from within the city itself. Those people are still going to consume and live in that city. The economic activity is going to shift within the city, but not necessarily reduce the overall economic activity. And then another thing that may be important looking forward is what type of industry is most prevalent in a specific city or region. And we know that some industries like the tech industry, for example, are a lot more likely to allow work from home, which means even less demand for office space versus other types of industry. And some of the research has looked at the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and work from home on office values. San Francisco is one of the markets that is hit the hardest because of that reason.
So Thomas, one of the reasons why this particular issue is so important to us at DebtWire Municipals is one aspect of our coverage is the issuance of bonds, specifically general obligation bonds. And those bonds are typically backed by, in some form, property taxes to secure those bonds. And it's always been seen as a very stable revenue stream. From what you're talking about with us today, it seems like it's still going to be a stable revenue stream, but it seems like the baseline might be lower in terms of expectations from commercial property taxes. So my question now is, what are potential strategies that cities can employ to mitigate the risk associated with commercial property taxes in terms of moving forward? If you have a $10 million budget, for example, how do you keep getting to that $10 million number if you can't count on, again, making up this number, $5 million from commercial property taxes, because now that number is going to be something like $4 million?
Yes. And I just want to add, based on your question, that it's really only a segment of the property tax base that we're talking about here, which is office buildings, right? And there's a larger question on how much the decline in office buildings and office value is going to impact other types of commercial real estate. And that will depend on some of the things I talked about, like how dependent the city is on commuters and how people live and behave in the city. But more generally, residential real estate make up the majority of property taxes in most cities, with some exceptions. If you look at DC, for example, commercial real estate is a lot more important in the property tax base than residential property. For cities where residential real estate is a big chunk of their property tax base, there could be a natural tendency towards shifting the decline in property tax collection from commercial real estate to residential real estate. And the large rise and growth in value since COVID-19 pandemic, we have values for residential real estate that are at their highest level in history or very close to. And so there could be that tendency for policymakers to rely on that. Some cities also have access to other types of revenues. Some cities have income taxes, sales taxes. And of course, cities don't necessarily have to increase their revenues, they can also cut their expenditures. And I think one important thing to look at here is the timeline of this crisis actually gives a lot of room to maneuver to city officials. And that's maybe the positive side. We know that there's very likely going to be a decline in the commercial property tax base in a lot of these cities, but that decline is going to be gradual and relatively slow in the short and medium run. And that gives cities a lot of leeway to adjust at the margin. And for example, if you look at expenditures, cities could look at reducing the growth rate of expenditures rather than cutting specific spending. Similarly, with taxes, you can have a gradual shift towards other sources of revenue that slowly make up for the expected downfall in commercial property taxes. So that's the positive side. On the negative side, raising taxes, cutting specific expenditures, that creates a risk for cities to become less attractive, enter this negative feedback cycle where the city gets less attractive, fewer business move there or stay there, fewer people want to live there, and then you actually end up with less taxes. And I think that it's really going to be a city by city decision, and cities differ in their preferences towards spending and expenditures, what constituents might value more, whether it's high level of public services versus having a place that is competitive with low taxes, will also likely influence how cities will respond.
And what's the time window we're looking at before cities have to make critical decisions because of this declining commercial property tax trend?
It's happening right now in some cities. So if you look at New York, if you look at Washington, D.C., there is evidence that even this year and next year, there is going to be a shortfall. So I think cities, especially those that have large downtown and office markets, need to start looking at this now because it is happening. But the full adjustment, just based on leases, terms, and on what people have looked at in terms of when we will reach a new equilibrium in terms of the market value of offices and office demand, that could be, you know, another 5 to 10 years. But it's certainly, cities are certainly starting to feel the pain of the decline in office value right now.
Thomas, how might the decline in office values impact local communities, you know, beyond immediate fiscal implications, such as employment trends and housing affordability or like access to public services?
That's a good question. And there's a lot of unknown in that area. I think that it is still unclear whether we're at a new equilibrium when it comes to work from home, whether more people are going to come back to the office or more companies are going to move to work from home. So there's still some uncertainty there. In terms of thinking beyond fiscal issues, cities have a balanced budget. So how much revenue they make is going to have a big impact on how much services they can provide. And cities, on the other hand, are still attractive. People want to live near their communities. They want to have access to amenities, to public services. So I think we're at a time where the demand for commercial real estate and the demand for residential real estate, where business want to be and where workers want to be, is less connected than it was before. And there is a possibility that cities will move in different directions. So some cities are going to remain attractive for workers and businesses. Other cities are going to potentially see declines in populations and businesses. And there has been these changes in the past. Whenever there's shifts in the economy and the type of industries that the economy relies on, which cities grow and which decline changes. And it's quite possible that this shift that we're looking at right now with working from home is going to have the same impact on specific areas in the long term. And another thing that is going to be really interesting to look at is how this will affect suburban communities and smaller cities. And there could be a lot of differences in how suburbs do and smaller cities compared to large metropolitan centers.
Well, thanks, Thomas and Kunal, for a thoughtful dialogue on city budgets and commercial property taxes.
Thanks for having me.
To our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, and/or subscribing to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.